Today, here comes
here
another
comes
one.
Another
so
call.
We're going to be down to two.
Two more.
Let's
you
another...
and one other.
That's right. You and one other. 244-9455. We can't hold up Focus 580 anymore, but as long as the phones are ringing, we can work toward meeting this challenge. $250 riding on your call.
One more.
One more call.
Be the next caller at 217-244-9455. We accept MasterCard, Visa, American Express, Discover Card. Your $40 pledge will mean $250, Jay.
Dial right now, 244-9455, and thank you.
Support for today's broadcast comes from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods at 6th and University in Champaign. For over 14 years, providing Champaign-Urbana with a wide array of name-brand foods from around the world. Your suggestions and requests are always welcome. World Harvest encourages you to join them in supporting public radio. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Lincoln Square Mall in Urbana, with more than a dozen shops, businesses, and restaurants, including Tang Dynasty Restaurant, So Sassy, Mr. John's School of Cosmetology, and the Arthritis Foundation.
Well, good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our telephone talk show. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. In just a moment here, we'll be talking about children's health with Dr. Robert Bocek. He's a pediatrician and has been with us here on Focus 580 pretty much once a month for quite a long time now as a resource for you to answer questions about the health and development and behavior of the children in your life. And we'll be getting onto that just a moment. And at the risk of just boring you to tears by once again reminding you that it's time to support the station. It's time to support the station. And if you value programs like Focus, locally produced programs, and we have a lot of them here on WILL, you need to know that this show deserves and indeed needs your financial support. Something like half, a little bit less than half, I think, on radio, the budget comes from people who listen to this radio station. And so if you're not a supporter, we would certainly appreciate it. Maybe you could call in and make a pledge at the basic level, which is just $40. You could start there, and of course, if you could contribute more, that would be great, but just a basic contribution at that level would be terrific. And you will also help us meet the continuing challenge of keeping the station strong, and also a little shorter term challenge that we have for this morning here on Focus 580. We have a couple in Urbana that say they enjoy the variety of guests and topics on the show, and they would like to encourage other Focus 580 listeners to support the station. And they said they would contribute an extra $250 if at least 15 Focus 580 fans call in a pledge this morning. So there is the challenge. If you've been listening to the program for a while and to the station for a while and have been thinking that one of these days you would become a supporter, sign on, this would be a great time to do it. Again, if you can, just at the basic level, which is $40, or if you can, more, that would be terrific. The number to call to make a pledge, 244-9455. 217 is the area code. And again, we're hoping to hear from at least 15 fans of Focus 580 this morning. And if we can do that, we will get an extra $250 from this couple in Urbana that are fans of the show. And we want to say thanks to them very much. Well, indeed, our guest this morning is Dr. Robert Bocek. He's a pediatrician. It says here on my schedule that you're also a clinical assistant professor at the University of Illinois. Is this,
that's
is
correct.
This the case? All right. Indeed, he does teach also at the university and continues. He is retired now. He's not practicing anymore, but continues to be very interested in the subject that has taken up so much of his time and his life, pediatrics and children's health, and for a long time has been here on the program, and that's what we talk about. So if you have questions, that's the idea here. Anything that you could think of asking a pediatrician, you can call, and he'll do his best to help you out, give you an answer. The number for the show, same as always, 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. And you will come right here to the show, just like always. We won't expect you or demand that you pledge. It would be nice, but that's not required. If you have a question, you want to talk to Dr. Bocek, you can give us a call. Well, thanks very much for being
here. Well, it's good to be here.
Maybe we'll talk just a little bit here about flu. I don't know if people are sick of hearing about that. By this time, though, I'm sure everybody has heard that there was a problem with one of the manufacturers of the vaccine. And all of the vaccine that we were going to use here in the United States came from one of two sources. One of them was manufacturing the vaccine in Britain, and the British government had a problem with their factory there, pulled their license, and that means that all of those doses of vaccine that they were going to produce and were coming to the United States are not coming. So we got about half. Now, when the news of this came out, the government said, well, we think that there should be enough vaccine to take care of the people that are considered to be high risk. And among them are children, little children. Now, I guess some of the stories I look at are raising this question. Indeed, will there even be enough vaccine to take care of the people who are in the high risk categories? As far as you know, do you think there will be?
You know, I guess I can't answer that. I think last month we talked about this, and I said everybody go out and get it because there were expected to be 100 million doses of the split variant, the dead vaccine. We've got 50 million doses, but even at 100 million, we've got close to 300 million Americans. So we were looking to maybe immunize a third of them. Mm-hmm. At the best, so well, we're down to a sixth of them. Is this a national disaster? I don't think so. I think this is a national inconvenience, but I don't think it's a national disaster because, well, I just read an article in Pediatrics, the medical journal, that came out, and they were talking about last year's flu immunization program for high-risk children. And what they were finding is, at best, maybe up to a third of the kids who were at high risk were getting it. So, you know, I'm not sure how short we really are as when we count the people who would get it, who would actively go out and stick their arm out the window at a drive-thru or someplace like that. So, but anyway, we are short of vaccine. Mm-hmm. But I still think this is an inconvenience, and I think what it means is we fall back to phase two, and we're falling back to our recommendations of 5 years ago. Only high-risk people will get it, and I think with the addition of the six-month-old to two-year-old. So if you're over 65, you're in the high-risk group. If you're between 6 months and 2 years, you're considered in the high-risk group. And again, this is not news. We've talked about this frequently in the past. Who gets the sickest, the very young and the very old? So they're in the high-risk group. And anybody with a chronic disease like chronic respiratory disease like asthma or emphysema, or anybody with a heart disease, or like the insulin-dependent diabetics, the type 2 diabetics, the adult-onset diabetics, they're probably at a little less risk. So, yeah, the people and pregnant women. So those people should try and get the vaccine. If you can't, all right, then we go back to phase two. Phase two is Kleenex and wash your hands. And the other thing I was looking to see how many doses of vaccine we got last year in the United States and how many were administered. And I couldn't find that data on the CDC's website. But the other interesting thing they talked about that I never thought about, if you cough into your upper sleeve, just put your arm in front of your mouth and cough into your upper sleeve. Don't cough on your hands because you may not get to wash your hands and you're going to shake hands with somebody. So, you know, it makes sense. Maybe don't sneeze in your upper sleeve because that gets a little bit, can be a little bit messier. But we're to phase two. I think the other thing we don't know if this is going to be a bad flu year or a mild flu year. I don't think anybody understands what the pandemic of 1918, 1919 was, what happened. But I think we're not looking for that. So I think what we're saying is that a few more people are going to have a miserable few days this winter with fever and cough and headache and runny nose and that sort of stuff. So, but again, I don't think this deserves the amount of media time it's gotten. It's an inconvenience. It's not a national disaster. It's not a communist plot. It's not a terrorist anything. It's just something went wrong at the plant in Britain, and we have half the vaccine doses that we hope to get.
Yeah. I know it's one of these. This is something that I think in the past has also kind of frustrated the people who do manufacture the vaccine, because it seems that every year they end up having to throw some vaccine away because you can't, it's no good for the next year. It's specifically formulated for that year. So you can't just hold it and give it out next year. And I guess, a pretty significant amount of it gets dumped because no one shows up and says, okay, give me the shot for that much. So it seems that they're sort of – they're kind of caught no matter what they do.
Yeah, and it's expensive. So, the Advantis, who did deliver – I mean, they certainly didn't want to make an extra 50 million doses that nobody was going to use because it was expensive for
them. And see, do I have it right that Aventis Pasteur was the company that was making most of the pediatric version?
That I'm not sure. My basic understanding is there's no pediatric. The vaccine's the vaccine.
It's all the same.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I also – see – when Dr. Jeff Swearingen, our family practice guy, was here the other day, someone called in and asked this question about – they said something like, well, they had heard that there was mercury in the vaccine.
Okay.
And Dr. Jeff says, well, I'm not really quite sure. Okay. So then I dutifully try to figure this out, and I go to the website of the CDC, Centers for Disease Control, and they actually had some information in there. And they said, well, technically, yes. There's a preservative that's called thimerosal.
Yeah.
However you pronounce it.
Yeah, and I think it's almost in every vaccine. So it's not – not unique to the influenza.
And that it indeed has some mercury in there. But they say that you don't sweat it. Don't worry about it. But then I also thought in that same article, it said that pediatricians weren't real cool about having that in the vaccine. And so that there was a version that was given to children that doesn't have thimerosal in it.
Yeah. I think the vaccines, they're looking for preservatives without mercury in it. Although, again, probably the amount of mercury in there is insignificant when you consider the scheme of things. Yeah. The other thing that struck me as I was thinking about this show, boy, we have the Chicken Little syndrome in this country. I don't know if it's worldwide or not, but, we all have the sky is falling. The sky is falling. Have faith, enjoy, and things are probably going to be okay.
Yeah, okay. And he, Dr. Jeff basically said the same thing. Look, at least we know that there are some basic things that you can do. Mm-hmm. That we say every year, we say, try to do these things and that'll reduce your risk of getting a cold, getting the flu, whatever. And that is the very things you say. And the best thing you can do is wash your hands. Hand washing. And, kind of watch out what kind of contact you have other people who obviously are sick. Do what you can to stay healthy. Do all things your mother said that you should do to stay healthy, and cross your fingers, and chances are you'll be okay.
And there's a lot of other viruses out there besides influenza that we have no vaccine for, and you're probably going to get a cold or something this winter, under the best of circumstances.
All right. Well, let's talk with someone in here on the phone. We have a caller in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hello, Chicken Little here. the numbers, I'm not exactly sure of the numbers, but the number that sort of sticks in my mind is that about approximately every year, 30,000 people die from the flu. Is that correct? In this country?
Yeah. Well, yes and no. And I think that's why we're talking about the high-risk people. If you have diabetes, if you have insulin-dependent diabetes, getting an acute febrile illness is not good for diabetic control. If you have chronic respiratory disease, asthma or emphysema, you get another respiratory disease on it, and it's not good. And if you have heart disease where, your heart and lungs, the blood flow is not right, and you get another insult on top of it, a stressful insult on top of it, that's not, it's not good. So these people are dying probably – some of them are dying directly from influenza. It can be an overwhelming pulmonary infection, but probably most of them are dying with influenza as a contributing factor.
Now, is this because they don't get vaccinated, or because the vaccine is not only partially protective, or what is the problem
there? Okay, it could be that they haven't bothered to get the vaccine. Or it could be that the powers that be have guessed wrong about what strains of influenza and influenza A and influenza B are going to be the evil villain this year. So it could be that the vaccine was designed completely wrong because there's a lot of uncertainty about All right. What types do – yeah, what do we put in this vaccine? What virus is – yeah, what type of influenza A or influenza B is going to be the villain in 2004-2005 winter? So it could be that the vaccine – that the 50 million doses we do have is completely worthless, that somebody's guessed wrong, and it's a different type of influenza that's going to hit us this year.
At any rate, that the number 30,000, if or whatever validity it has, is it's getting right up there with automobile accidents, people dying in that, and also with people dying of gunshot.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. But you know what? We can do something about automobile deaths, can't we? We can buckle our seatbelts. We can not drink and drive. We can put bike helmets on when we're on bicycles. We can lock up our firearms or keep our firearms safer. So those things we can do something about. Influenza, yes, maybe we can do something about, but not definitely can we do something about that. But these other things we can definitely do something about.
It seems to me like if we would really have, twice as much emphasis on getting the people at risk vaccinated, that might cut down on it. But anyway,
yes.
I just wanted to make one other comment about I forgot the name of the company. It's a U.S. company with a factory in Britain.
I think it's Chiron.
Yeah.
Chiron. Yeah. That after it was the supplies were cut off, I remember hearing that I think it was the CDC. Or NIH, somebody began checking those supplies which had already been shipped from that company to this country to see if any of it could be usable, and they found that it was contaminated. So we had already imported apparently a lot of contaminated stuff, and so they found they couldn't use any of it.
Yes.
So it's not just the British government being nasty. I mean, they were actually saving us from... a problem.
Oh yes, and it sounds like maybe the problem was that the United States authorities and the British authorities didn't have good communication, so alternate sources could not be arranged in time, and it's too bad. But I guess in a way, there may be some blessings out of this in that it won't happen again.
Yep, hope so.
Okay, yes. Well, thanks for the call. Well, here now, just for the record, as they like to say on the BBC, or is it the CDC, or the CBC, I've got some information here. According to the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta, the CDC, in an average year, influenza is associated with about 20,000 deaths nationwide. And then just for basis of comparison, if you look at the three pandemics that we know about, the 68-69 outbreak of Hong Kong flu in the United States, 34,000 people died. In the 57-58 Asian flu outbreak, 70,000 people died in the United States. And in the big one, the Spanish flu of 1918-1919, about 500,000 people in the United States died. So just to give you some benchmark of the three cases that we think were the worst that we know about, the worst, 500,000 in 1918. But then again, as the CDC says, in an average year, 20,000 people in the United States.
Yeah. And we're talking about a U.S. population of what, close to 300 million people, 280 some million people. So odds are in our favor.
Okay. Well, we're talking here this morning with Dr. Robert Bocek, something we do every month on the show, talking about children's health. And a long time ago when we sat down and thought, well, what are the kind of things that people are always going to have questions about and that we could help by having resources here on the show? Well, children's health was one of those. And someone in the staff in the dim and distant past, I think that Dr. Bocek was the pediatrician for their family. And they say, well, this is the guy that you need to have. So we called him, and he was very nice to say, well, yeah, I will do that. And now, lo, these many years, how many? More than 20?
I don't. At first, I was an irregular guest. And then,
that's right. Yeah. That's right. We would just have him kind of every once in a while. And then we said, well, let's do it once a month. And he said, well, yes, he would do that. So for quite a while, he's been here every month. He and there are some other people that we also have on every month. And if you're out there, you got a question, you need to talk with a pediatrician, well, you know, at least once a month, this guy's going to be here, and he'll do his best to help you out. We try as much as we can to make this a useful program. And one way we do that is by bringing in people who have information and can help you out. And all you have to do is call. Well, now we're asking for a little something back. If you're not a financial supporter of the station, now would be a great time to do it. If you listen to this on other shows here on Focus or on this station, you need to know that almost half of the money that it takes to run this place comes from people like you. And that's why it's so important that we hear from as many people as we can and encourage them to go to their telephones, pick them up, and dial this number, 244-9455. Call in and make a pledge, which means sending us some money and helping pay the cost of running the station. You know, whatever you think that's worth to you. A basic contribution, $40, that would be great. You know, more would be better, but that would be great. So give us a call. So here in the studio with me also is Jack Brighton.
Hello.
He is our head web guy, our internet guy. He's really responsible for kind of putting together and maintaining our website and doing other web-related things. Has in the past, was a long time, been associated with this program, Focus 580. We call him our producer emeritus. And he still is good enough to fill in now and again if I'm not around.
Right. Well, and I want to just add to your pitch there for the $40 basic membership pledge that we ask, you know, for. It gets you Patterns Magazine and gets you that great feeling that you're giving something back to the station that you get so much from. When you think of how much that actually costs you, it works out to about 11 cents a day. Now, I don't know about you, but there are days when I leave more than 11 cents in the penny jar next to the cash register at the various places, the coffee shop or wherever I'm going. And I don't really miss that. So, you know, why don't you leave some change in our penny jar here? 11 cents a day gets you a membership in the Friends of WILL. If you've never joined before, especially it's important that we hear from you. 217-244-9455, because let's face it, the dollars that we get from the government are going down. They have continued to decline over the years, while the dollars contributed by our listeners go up. And that's a very good thing. We know our audience is growing. New people discover the station. New people realize that they need to know what's going on in the world, discover value here at WILL. And if you're one of those people, we ask that you join us with your support of the station. Again, 217-244-9455. And we also have a challenge going on, and Kimberly Cronick, who is our outreach coordinator, is with the phone volunteers. What is the challenge for this this two-hour period of Focus?
Yes. Good morning, Jack, and thank you. And we have Dorcas and Audrey ready to take your call. And we have an Urbana couple that enjoys the variety of guests and topics on Focus 580 and wants to encourage listeners here to support the station. So they'll give an extra contribution of $250 if at least 15 Focus 580 fans call in and pledge this morning. So we have an hour and a half to hear from 15 listeners who become members, and we'll get an extra $250. That's something we very much appreciate. So if you haven't yet called, do so now, 217-244-9455. Remember, basic membership is $40, but if you're a senior or a student, that's just $25. And the goal here, again, is to hear from 15 people so we can get that extra $250, which we appreciate so very much.
Now, 15 people isn't that many. We know there are thousands of people listening to the show at any particular moment in time. We also know that just 1 out of 10 of our listeners has made a pledge to support the station. So, you know, we know there are a lot of people out there who are listening who have never pledged. We don't want to make you feel guilty. What we do want you to do is pick up the telephone and call us, 217-244-9455.
And it looks like we're getting one call right now, so we would have 14 to go. That's a great start, 244-9455. I want to remind listeners that, as David said earlier, we bring you people who can answer your questions, who can reduce your fear, who can give you information that you can use. We do this monthly with different folks. For example, on Monday, Dr. Suzanne Troopin, Women's Health, will be our topic. We have personal finance, home care and maintenance, talk to the family doctor, lawn and garden care. We bring you all these experts who can get information to you that you can really use, in addition to all the other guests we have. And as Jack said, it's just 11 cents a day if you can become a member at the $40 level. But if you're a little bit more limited in your income, or you're a senior or a student, we'll take your membership at $25. And if you can afford a little bit more, which I know some folks can, $75 will get you the basic membership card, which gets you 2-for-1 entrees in a variety of restaurants. But the main thing really is to meet that challenge by calling in with a pledge right now. 14 more listeners becoming members will get us that extra $250, which we need so much to reach our goals. Again, that's 217-244-9455.
One last thought here, Kimberly. As you were saying, we provide all these shows on practical issues that everybody has to deal with. You know, you count on us to provide you really good advice and expertise on all these issues. We count on you to help us keep this going. So don't let us down. Give us a call with your pledge, 217-244-9455.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Kim and Jack. We'll talk with you again in a little bit. For people who are listening here, I just want to again introduce our guest, Dr. Robert Bocek. He's pediatrician and clinical assistant professor at University of Illinois. And for a long time now, once a month, he's been here, always on a Thursday, 10 o'clock hour. And we talk about children's health. So if you have a question, you are certainly welcome to call 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, 800-222-9455. Something you want to talk about?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I just want to – this is off the – this is not on the – scripted. But I've been gratified to be a participant in Focus 580 for a lot of years. I'm gratified to feel like part of the WILL family. I'm gratified as a listener to listen to WILL AM and FM. And you know what? You folks could gratify me a little bit more by lighting up the pledge lines and helping this station out.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Do what the doctor says, ladies and gentlemen. He is part of you are part of the WILL family.
That's right.
I mean, you can't have a guy come in here every month for 20 years and not have them be part of the WILL. Well, at least we think of you that way.
And if you contribute, you won't get influenza. No, I better
don't make promises that like that. Yeah, exactly. Well, something else I thought I would just, see what you think about. This is also something that's been in the news a lot, that apparently I think this happened just last week, the FDA has said to the drug companies that make antidepressants that they need to put on their package inserts the strongest warning that they do about
the black
medication.
Box.
The black box, exactly. Exactly. Saying that that these medications increase the risk of suicidal thoughts and behaviors in children and adolescents who take them. Now, here, I guess we're really talking about I guess you have to ask this question, well, okay, how much of an increased risk are we talking about? We're talking about a couple of percent, but of course, you'd like that to be zero. You really want that to be zero. So, and the idea is here to really impress upon, really mostly to impress upon physicians, the people who are going to be writing the prescriptions, that this is something that you really have to think about. So don't be casual in writing this, and that everybody, make sure you also have informed your patients are informed that they know about this too. And apparently this covers a number of medications, Prozac, Paxil, yeah. Zoloft. There's a whole long list of them. What do you think about that? I don't know. When you were practicing, how many – were you writing prescriptions for drugs like that?
Never.
Children?
Never. I think these drugs were in the category where, well, rarely, but only if they were under the care of a psychiatrist at the same time or had a counseling appointment coming up, because I think these are drugs that are kind of cavalierly thrown around, and I think part of the problem may again be public marketing. So you've got people coming in saying, I read about this wonderful drug on TV and I've been feeling blue for the last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. But the problem seems to be more of a pediatric adolescent problem for some reason. The suicide rate seems to be higher there. And I don't think, what's going on is they've really figured it out. But I think, yes, these medications need to be prescribed with caution and with care, and to make sure that these people are getting adequate therapy other than a chemical thrown at them.
Mm. Okay. And the list of medications that we're talking about is really quite long, and it's all of the, you know, the names that people maybe will recognize.
These are the SSRIs, the serotonin
selective reuptake inhibitors.
Yeah.
Okay.
That were supposed to be safe. And you know what? Compared to the tricyclic antidepressants that they're replacing, they are much safer. That is, if you overdose with the drug, it's not going to have as serious effect as if you overdose with one of the tricyclics. But there's other ways to kill yourself other than overdosing, and it may be that these drugs have been cavalierly used in the patients. Yeah, here, take this drug and get out of my office, and that they aren't getting adequate therapy.
Okay. And I'm sure also that, in fairness, I probably want to say that there. I'm sure there are a lot of physicians who would say, and individuals who would say, that they have found these in their patients, these medications have worked very well and they've been very helpful. So, I mean, it's not like you're going to say that that's not any good for anybody.
No.
But particularly this group of individuals, that is children, adolescents, for some reason, and as you say, I guess really, really don't know why, they have those kind of problems.
And I kind of regard these medications as adjunct therapy. Yeah, they're good, but you know what? Make sure that you're having good counseling, that you're getting good counseling and good supervision along with it.
All right. Well, let's talk with some other folks. We have a couple callers here, and Urbana next here, line number one.
Is this line one?
Yes.
Okay. I'm not sure if this is exactly your field, but I've recently been diagnosed with emphysema. And I'm still kind of in the panic mode, and I'm kind of curious as to just how manageable the disease is.
Emphysema is not exactly a pediatric disease. And I guess what I'd have to do is kind of drop back to put it in my sphere of reference, which would be asthma. So I think, you know, if you're having acute bronchospasm and acute inflammation as part of it, there are good medications out to help relieve that.
Yeah. Right now, about the only thing I really feel is shortness of breath. But like I said, I'm in panic mode, so I'm not real sure.
Okay. I don't know if there's any emphysema support groups in the area. You might call your local hospital, see if there's any emphysema support groups. And call, you're probably under the care of a pulmonologist, too.
No, not now. Not yet.
Okay.
I just got the diagnosis like a week and a half ago.
Okay. Yeah, I think probably your next step would be a pulmonologist, a specialist in disease of the lung. And I think he or she would probably be a good source of education material for you. And can fix you up with support groups and possibly therapy groups in the sense that physical activity may help increase your pulmonary compliance and that sort of thing. So if the diagnosis is right and I would go to a pulmonologist to get it confirmed, but things can be done about pulmonary disease.
Okay. Well, thank you much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Bye. Let's talk next with someone in Chicago. This is a caller on our toll-free line, line four. Hello.
Hello, good morning. I wanted to go back to teenagers and depression. I was wondering, I just read about this, well, I don't know if it's really a disease, but they're calling it the new economy depression syndrome. But it's basically information overload, especially people who use computers. They found that if you spend more than 30 hours on the Internet. This was a small study, only about 1,500 people, but they had symptoms of feeling exhaustion, irritation, and anxiety and general depression. And I was wondering if could that Internet use or just computer use be one of the problems with teenagers, because it seems like there's an increase in depression, maybe maybe it's being diagnosed more often, I don't know what, but has anyone looked at internet or computer use or time spent on the computer and depressions in teens?
Yeah, not that I know of, but I think, you know, again, it's like we've talked about before, balance your life. You know, I think we certainly know about TV leading to violence, leading to obesity and that sort of thing. And what's the difference between TV and the internet? Well, you know, not much. Except that I think there's, yeah, you can find a whole lot of stuff on the internet that I'm not sure anybody needs to have access to. But I'm not aware of any studies about internet use and depression. Although there was a report of what, 6 suicides in Japan that were arranged on the internet somehow.
Right. They're chat groups, I guess, that people who feel suicidal. I saw that study. Yeah.
So I suppose if you're feeling a little bit down, you get to chatting with somebody that feels a lot more down, and they can get you feeling pretty down. Yeah. And I can see where there's yeah.
But I was just wondering if maybe more physicians thought, because the remedy that they're suggesting was simply to time out, cut back on the amount of time. And I was wondering if they did study this more, perhaps more physicians, instead of recommending a drug, they may need to recommend some sort of rest and relaxation and
turn the computer off.
Which would perhaps help a lot of people more than putting a warning on a black box.
Do you wonder why, you know, isn't it a little bit of get a life? Why are these people spending 30 hours a week on the internet? Or why are these people spending 30 hours a week watching TV? Or why are these people, you know, get a life? There's a lot out there. Enjoy. We've got an obesity problem, you know. Get out on your bicycle, take a walk, go out with friends. But it's kind of sad that to think about people having nothing else to. Maybe they're a little depressed to begin with, that they have nothing else to do but withdraw into their room and spend 30 hours a week on the internet. That's a sad commentary.
But I think it's so easy for teenagers, especially if, in a lot of cases, if both parents are working and they're the teenagers alone, because now quite often there's no siblings. It's almost like, what else can they do but try to connect through the computer? And I think there's a lot of encouragement both at the school level that you have to be computer savvy, so there's a lot of pressure for the teen to spend time on the computer and inevitably on the internet. So
yeah.
I mean, it just seems like this is a lot of combined problems that we need to look at.
Because the internet certainly does not make you computer savvy, does it?
No, but I think most people assume that the more you use the computer, they're trying to get computers earlier and earlier in the school system. And I don't know, it seems sometimes we have so much technology and we don't try to figure out how is it going to impact as we go down the line.
Because I used to hear that often when I was in practice. You know, my kid doesn't watch TV. But boy, they sure do like video games and the internet, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the computer monitor is just a little smaller TV screen than your big screen TV. It's still keeping you out of living.
Mm-hmm.
It's keeping you out of interchanges with other people, and it's keeping you from exercising, and it's probably making you snack on potato chips while you're clicking through the internet.
Yeah. Well, thank you anyway.
Right. Thank you.
Well, thanks for the call. Back here to someone in Champaign. They're the next caller. Line 2. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, I have a couple of questions. The first one is there a relationship between attention deficit disorder and depression, and how ADD is diagnosed? And I will hang up and listen.
Okay.
Thanks.
You know, that's an interesting. Is there a connection between depression and attention deficit disorder? If you look at the DSM, there's a big overlap between the symptoms of attention deficit disorder and the symptoms of depression. So I think that's what always made me I was always uncomfortable about diagnosing attention deficit disorder. Was I making the right diagnosis? So yes, there seems to be a relationship, and maybe, yeah, depression can be misdiagnosed as attention deficit disorder. And David, can you remind me of the second part of the question?
She just was asking for how do you diagnose ADD?
It's like any other mental health problem. You're listing B, you know, you've got list A and list B, and if you've got six behaviors from list A and three from list B, that's your diagnosis. So as a physician trained in the usual way, it was a little bit unsatisfactory because I was so used to having the CBC says this and the liver function tests say that and the x-ray looks this way. That's the way I make the diagnosis. So I was dealing with, you know, the teacher says this, but I don't see that. And you say, okay, now how do I measure as a physician what's too much hyperactivity? What's too much inattention? Because it's something that can't be weighed and can't be measured. And I was always very uncomfortable making the diagnosis of attention deficit disorder, but that's what it is. It's a behavioral checklist, basically. And there's been Connors rating scales and others rating scales to help try and quantify this, but it still caused me difficulty because you were quantifying things that you couldn't weigh or measure, that you couldn't quantify. The other thing, I was talking to somebody the other night, my wife. I do talk to my wife every once in a while. And most kids with ADD are boys. And we were reminiscing over our past, over our teachers as we went through school. And I remember my fourth grade teacher, Miss Pope. And my wife said, "Why do you remember Miss Pope?" Well, you know what? Miss Pope liked boys. She didn't. And I'm wondering about, we went on to speculate, if more elementary school teachers were men instead of women, would there be less attention deficit disorder because they'd be more sympathetic to the boys' attitudes and boys' behaviors? And this is just, I have no information about this. Again, it was just a posit, just a wonder. Mm-hmm. But yeah, these diagnoses, that diagnosis when I was in practice made me very uncomfortable because I was trying to weigh and measure signs and symptoms, not signs, nothing physical there, that don't go on a scale, or you can't have
blood test, no, nothing like that. It's just a matter of your observations, one person's observations of symptoms, and then comparing that with what is supposed to be the standard list of symptoms. And I suppose the more of them, that more of the things on the list that you see in the child, then you would feel more confident. The more signs that you could point to of saying, well, okay, that this is the correct diagnosis.
And can depression be misdiagnosed or vice versa as attention deficit disorder? Yes. Or can a child with attention deficit disorder who fails repeatedly get depressed? So can depression and attention deficit disorder be comorbid conditions? Yes.
Mm. Okay. Well, I hope that helps. I'm sure a lot of people would find that an unsatisfying answer. I don't mean that as a criticism. I mean it just that you know, everybody would find that an unsatisfying. Even the doctors find that to be sort of an unsatisfying kind of situation that they find themselves in. Yeah. Okay. Let's go to line number 3 in Champaign. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
I'm the mom with the 4-month-old who doesn't have family nearby to ask questions.
Okay.
So, Dr. Bocek, you're my source. Two things. One, we're taking a trip with him and on the plane, and had heard that using a nasal mist would help. Is there anything else that – does that help, one? And is there anything else we should do to prepare him for the flight? It's only a 2-hour flight, so it's not too bad.
You know what? I don't think you're going to have a problem.
Okay.
With a 4-month-old – you kind of cuddle them and hold them and that. And I don't think you're going to have a problem.
Okay, good. Okay. So using the nasal mist, is that a good idea? Or
you know, I'm not sure. I'm not familiar with what you're talking about.
It's a saline spray.
It
apparently keeps their sinus, you know.
Helps to pop
passages.
Their ears. I always recommended a pacifier.
Okay. The saline is for, you know, so he doesn't get dried out and then...
Oh.
Doesn't catch
yeah, but it's only
up,
a two-hour flight. And you know what?
Yeah.
We're going to spend all winter around here with low humidity and dryness.
That's true.
So I don't think that'll be a problem. A pacifier or about – you're breastfeeding too, as I recall,
yeah.
aren't you?
Yeah.
Does the baby use a pacifier?
Yes. Nap time mainly.
Yeah. You know, I'm just thinking of to help him clear his ears, to help him pop his ears as the plan ascends and descends.
Okay, great. The other one is, you know, since he's 4 months old, he can't get the flu shot. Now, my husband and I both got it.
Okay.
But here's my concern is that by the time he does turn 6 months, there's nothing left for him to take, you know.
We're on to next year.
Yeah.
And
so, I don't know, I guess, what are the symptoms that kind of manifest themselves in infants so that maybe we can stay on top of that?
They enjoy the same symptoms we do.
They do.
The fever, the aches, the cough, the sneezes. May I ask, are you a stay-at-home mom?
No.
Okay, so he goes to a daycare center.
That's the other problem.
So that increases risk. Yeah. Hopefully, I don't know what his classroom situation is. Hopefully many of the other kids and the adult supervisors there, the teachers there, have been immunized. So that will lower his risk.
Right. And with our being immunized, that will also help too.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
But actually, just look for the same old things that we're looking for, and you know, for me or for someone else.
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You know, for children who don't have both working parents, infants, you know, have a parent that stays home with them, their risk of getting influenza is a little bit lower because they're. Yeah, they're not exposed to groups in daycare centers. So, you folks who have the option of not sending your child to a daycare center, your child's risks are for influenza are a little bit lower.
Okay. Well, I guess we're about the point we're going to wrap up. Any last thing you'd like to leave with folks this time around?
To call Pledge Central.
All right. You heard what the doctor said, ladies and gentlemen. Call Pledge Central. Dr. Robert Bocek, he's a pediatrician, clinical assistant professor at University of Illinois, with us once a month on a Thursday. We talk about children's health. As always, great pleasure to have you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our programs here are made possible by grants from Christopher's Fine Jewelry Design, a gallery of imaginative jewelry and gifts in downtown Champaign, offering one-of-a-kind custom design, gemstone roundtables, conflict-free diamonds direct from Canada. Also, funds come from Bodywork Associates, this year celebrating their 22nd anniversary. Bodywork Associates has been providing professional massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana since 1982. And, of course, a very, very important source of the funds it takes to run this place, the people who listen, the friends of WILL. If you're among them, we want to say thanks. If not, right now, it's an opportunity to join. 244-9455 is the number to call to make a pledge. We're past the midpoint of this week's fundraising effort for this fall. Maybe it's been on your list of things to do, and you've been busy, and you just haven't gotten, and you've said, okay, well, I'm going to do it. I'm going to get to it. Maybe if you have the opportunity right now, it would be a good time to do it. You can cross that thing off the list and then get on with everything else that's on the list. 244-9455. That is the number. Here in the studio with me, Jack Brighton.
Hello.
Hello.
I know we're getting lots of calls during this hour of Focus 580. I see the phone lights lighting up. Let's check in with Kimberly Chronic. Oh, I love to hear that sound. Who is with the telephones, the people answering them, and we've got a challenge going. How are we doing on that, Kimberly?
Okay, we're on our way. We're getting calls. FM's also asking for calls, so we're getting a lot of FM calls right now.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, we need to hear from 15 people by noon because an Urbana couple said they enjoy Focus 580 so much and the variety of guests that they'll donate an extra $250 if 15 listeners become members during Focus 580. We have two right now so far, and I believe we have another one. So we have three of the 15 that we need, so we are well on our way. Let's erase the doubt on the volunteers' faces that says, we can't do this. We can do this. You can do it. Let me give you two inspiring stories real quick. Daniela Schwartz from Brooklyn, New York, called in to make a pledge. She's either listening on the internet or visiting here, and she heard us and she made a pledge. We want to thank her. Michael Doyle from Urbana made a pledge with Champaign County Healthcare Consumers, one of our partners in our Smile Healthy campaign. We had a caller yesterday from Springfield. Mr. Wilson said, you know, what Focus 580 does is it improves the quality of life for the elderly who are homebound, who are shut in, who are in nursing homes. And if you agree with that, why don't you call in right now? Student and senior memberships are just $25. Basic membership is just $40. 244-9455. The main thing is we've got to hear from 12 more people by noon to get that extra $250 to keep us on track. We ask for many people to contribute because we're your public radio station. We're not asking for one or two people to do it all. We're just asking for you to do your part, and we know we can do that. So call right now, 244-9455.
Now, also, I want to add that if you're listening on the internet, you can just, you know, make a pledge right there on our website. On the top of every single web page on our entire website is a link that says pledge. And if you click on that, it takes you to a form that you can fill out and make a credit card contribution. It's on a secure web server, so it's totally safe for you to do that. A lot of people have made web contributions. I'd like to see, as the Internet Development Director, I would like to see more people make web pledges. And in fact, you know, it's funny because when we first started streaming on the Internet, some people said, well, if you do that, you know, a lot of people are going to give you money, because they're going to be so happy to be able to get the archives of all the shows that we produce, which are on the website. And what you ought to do is you ought to just charge them, you know, per download. So every time they listen to something, that they'll, you know, you'll be getting money from them. And I said, no. We're not going to do that because that's not our business model. We are here to serve the citizens, the listeners, and the people out there in the community. And I'm not going to say people who can afford it can be served and people who can't afford it will not be served. I think that we need to serve everyone. So we depend on the people who can afford to give something back to fund the service to keep us going. So if that's you, please make a pledge either online at will.uiuc.edu or call our pledge line, 217-244-9455.
Quickly, I just want to add, we want to hear from four more people by noon. That'll get us halfway to that goal of 15 pledgers by noon to get that extra $250 that an Urbana couple has generously donated. We can do it. You can do it. Four more calls by noon. Give us a call right now, 244-9455, and you won't miss a second of the next hour of Focus 580. Thank you.
I do want to mention also real quick that another kind of regular topic that we feature on our talk programming is computers and internet issues and technology and so forth, coming up today as part of the Afternoon Magazine. This is a regular feature that they do. They call the show Computers and You. That will be in the 1 o'clock hour. Greg Klein will be here. He's science and technology reporter for the News Gazette newspaper. So if you have questions, anything about buying a computer, you're having a problem with your computer now, he's pretty good at troubleshooting. So you can call him with questions. Later on today, Celeste will be talking with Gretchen Helfrich, host of the Odyssey talk show that we air here on WILL. It follows the Afternoon Magazine. So that's all on the Afternoon Magazine. It's underway at noon here on AM 580. Next part of this show, we're going to have a good time. We welcome back for a special appearance the man we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore. We're going to talk about chili. So I hope you could stick around. We'll have news at 1 minute past the hour right now, an update on the commodity markets.
Agricultural information is made possible in part by a grant from the Archer Daniels Midland Company. ADM, the nature of what's to come.
Good morning, everyone. This